Hey, I see now.
We do not have a quorum, but we will have presentation on matters that don't need a approval of the committee. So, roll call.
All right, Chair Brennan. Committee Member Copeland. No. Committee Member Hatchett.
Here.
Committee Member McLooney. Committee Member Smith.
Here.
Committee Member Storm. Vice Chair Stroh. Committee Member Swint. Committee Member Turley. We do not have quorum. Can you speak into your mic and turn it on?
We'll defer the action on the minutes from April 4th to later on when we have a quorum. The next item on the agenda is to review proposed amended draft Rule 218, Title 5 Federal Operating Permits. Do we have a presentation?
Please turn on the mic. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Mary Girotto. I'm the engineering supervisor with MBARD, and today I'm going to give a discussion on our proposed revisions to Rule 218, which is our federal operating permits regulation. In today's presentation, I'll give you a brief background on the Title V program. We'll also discuss recent Clean Air Act revisions, and I'll go into detail on our proposed amendments to Rule 218 as a result of these Clean Air Act revisions. And lastly, I will address any public comments received. So Title V is a section in the Federal Clean Air Act that regulates air emissions from stationary sources. Title V requires that major sources of air pollutants and another list of very specific sources obtain and operate in compliance with a federal operating permit. The requirements of Title V are codified in 40 CFR Part 70 for local permitting agencies like ourselves. And we have been delegated by EPA to implement the Title V program since April of 2001. And this approved program is contained in our District Rule 218. I do want to mention at this point that Title V is not a pre-construction or construction permit, and it doesn't impose any additional limits on a facility. The intent is to take all of the federally enforceable conditions that are on a facility's district permits and place them onto one consolidated document. So the last time we revised 218 was in 2010. And we added EPA's Title V greenhouse gas tailoring rule provisions. These provisions required that a Title V major source, it would become a major source if it exceeded a threshold of 100,000 tons per year of greenhouse gases. In August of 2015, EPA had to rescind that greenhouse gas tailoring rule. And that's because the US Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that the Clean Air Act conception of a major source did not include greenhouse gases. There's kind of two parts to their decision. The first part, again, was to say greenhouse gas emissions alone cannot make a facility a major source. However, there was a caveat that if a facility is in the program for some other reason and they exceed 100,000 tons per year of greenhouse gases, then the agency can include those federally enforceable conditions on the Title V permit. In October 2016, EPA also finalized revisions to modernize its public noticing provisions in all of their Clean Air Act permitting programs. And that was to allow electronic noticing in lieu of newspaper noticing. And most recently, and really the reason why we're fast tracking this today, is in July of 2023, EPA finalized the removal of what's called emergency affirmative defense provisions. And again, they did this in all of their Clean Air Act programs. Basically, these provisions would allow a facility to avoid litigation if they were not in compliance with a technology-based permit condition. And if those excess emissions were a result of an emergency from an unforeseeable event. Well, the reason they had to remove those was in 2014, the DC Circuit Court of Appeals concluded that EPA had exceeded its statutory authority. And in fact, that they had improperly limited the court's ability to determine reprimands for a private civil suit. As a result, EPA notified the local permitting authorities that we needed to submit program revisions to EPA to remove these emergency defense provisions by August 21st, 2024. So as a result of these three revisions to the Clean Air Act, MBARD is proposing to revise Rule 218 as follows. So first off, to address the greenhouse gases, basically everything that we added in 2010, we're proposing to remove. That includes removing the definitions of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions, greenhouse gases. We're proposing to remove the revise the definition of major source to remove sources that emit 100,000 tons per year or more of carbon dioxide equivalent. And since it's no longer necessary, we're going to revise the exemption section to remove the references for greenhouse gases. I do want to point out here that this will have no impact on the 15 Title V sources that are with MBARD because none of them trigger this, and they're all in the program for a different reason. MBARD has the tools in place to implement these new modernized public notice requirements. So we are proposing to remove the mandatory requirement that you public notice in a newspaper for one day and instead replace it with the more flexible option to, again, you can continue to public notice in the newspaper or post the notice for the entire 30 days on our website and email the notice to all interested parties who subscribe to our MBARD's maintain list. To ensure we comply with the Title V operating program per the DC Circuit's decision in 2014, we have removed all of the emergency provisions that are in our section 4.215. And since it's no longer necessary, we also remove the definition of emergency. Since the rules open, we also decided to update it as we have with all our other recent rules, and that is remove the definition and reference of district and replace it with the definition and reference of MBARD. There's also some updating formatting just as a result of changing the format from a WordPerfect to a Word document. The public notice period ends tomorrow, but as of today, we have not received any public comments. As such, staff is recommending that the advisory committee provide comments on our proposed amendments to 218. Any questions?
Any questions?
They made the change in 2014. It took 10 years to.
So the 2014 decision was for another aspect of EPA. And so they were slowly reviewing all of their policies. And yes, it does take that many years for the wheels to turn. Yes.
So these changes are essentially required.
Correct.
All right. Any comments? No comments. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any Next item is a presentation on the zero emission school bus program.
Good afternoon, Advisory Committee. My name is Edward Balleron, and I will be presenting on the launch of the Zero Emission School Bus Program for the fiscal year of 2024-25. 25 million children ride school buses every day, and because of this, children are exposed to diesel exhaust, which can contain a number of different harmful compounds, including carbon dioxide, nitrogen oxides, VOCs, particulate matter, and air toxics, just to name a few. Children are more susceptible to these sorts of things because their lungs are not fully developed and they have faster breathing rates. And so because of this, the primary goal of Zero Emission School Bus Program is to reduce children's exposure to both cancer-causing and smog-forming pollution. The history of Zero Emission School Bus Program primarily stems from Assembly Bill 923, which was passed in 2004. Did two things, which the first one being increase the motor vehicle registration fee by $2, which is what we collect, and funds projects in different clean air categories. Now, an example of a clean air category is the lower emission school bus program, or LESB. And so the LESB focused on funds on the replacement of old diesel school buses with modern diesel models, and also had the option of adding diesel particulate filters. In 2015, CARB issued their mail out 15-19, which essentially established guidelines for electric bus fleet expansion, effectively starting the zero emission school bus program. And so in prior years, the MBARD zero emission school bus program has already funded 12 buses and utilized over $2.5 million in AB 923 funds. So it's a pretty successful program. AB 923 funds have a couple of advantages, the first being that they are local funds and therefore add more flexibility in terms of usage, both usage and reporting. And also these are fleet expansion projects as opposed to destruction. So we do not have to destroy any buses to complete a project. For fiscal year 24-25, $2 million have been budgeted. And so we expect 6 to 7 projects. That, of course, will depend on the bus types that are requested, as well as if applicants leverage any other funding sources. Again, program requirements were established by CARB in that mail out 15-19, and some of those requirements include applicant eligibility, gross vehicle weight rating limits, project life, battery specifications, that's including range and capacity, warranty minimums, eligible costs, and also the requirement that any bus funded by AB 923 funds be CHP certified. Now, to be eligible for the program, applicants must do one of four things. The first being they must be a public school district or a county office of education or a joint powers authority or JPA or a public charter school. Applicants must also either own their own buses or contract with an entity that owns their own buses, and of course, be able to follow program guidelines as well as contract requirements. Now, once they are determined to be eligible, applicants can expect to receive up to $400,000 for an electric school bus and $20,000 for charging infrastructure. And so that's a great thing about AB 923 funds is we can fund one charger for every bus that we deliver. Now, to save funds, we will encourage applicants to leverage other funding sources, including the hybrid and zero emission truck and bus voucher incentive project, which is HVIP for short. And so HVIP is a state program which can cover typically up to $200,000 or about half the cost of a bus. And so AB 923 funds will be able to cover the remainder of the cost. Applicants will be able to access the application through the MBARD webpage through our LaserFiche form, which is processed on a first-come, first-served basis. And LaserFiche is great because it is an online platform, therefore it's easy to access. It has clear instructions for applicants to follow and also provides a smooth workflow for applicants and is an easy way for applicants to upload and manage their documents. So we're trying something new with this program this year. Laserfiche has the ability to generate grant agreements automatically. And so we'll be able to send applicants their grant agreements after staff review. Now these grant agreements will have a number of different contract details stipulated in the program requirements, including grantee information, funding sources and amounts, project life, and for these projects, there will be a reporting period of 5 years, grantee obligations, a number of different program requirements, as well as vehicle information that's including vehicle specifications and quotes. And these grant agreements will be fully executed when they are signed by both the grantee representative and the NBARD APCO. And finally, here's a few examples of some buses that we've already funded through the program. Lion Electric Type D, which is $500,000. BYD Type A, which is a special education bus. My son actually rides one of these. $320,000, and also a Bluebird Type C, which is closer to $400,000. So all these buses are ready to go and eligible for funding for the Zero Emission School Bus Program. So thank you. If you have any questions and recommendations, I'd love to hear them.
Any questions?
There was some of the money that could be used for charger infrastructure. Can that include solar panels?
There's nothing in the, that's a good question. I'm not necessarily sure about that. We're getting a lot of the guidelines from that mail out and they don't mention anything about solar panels. So I'll have to check on that. Yeah, go ahead.
There are some solar panel charging stations available, which would probably qualify, but solar panels themselves probably would not. And we've got some of the first in the nation down at Camp Roberts that are solar panel charging DC fast charging stations.
Other questions?
For the charging infrastructure, does that allow for any future, I'm assuming, or is that one per bus effectively for the infrastructure set up?
One per bus. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Up to 20,000, of course.
Yeah. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Next item is the program policies and procedures manual.
Good afternoon, Chairman Brennan and members of the committee. My name is Tyrone Bell. I'm a planner here at the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. I will be presenting our proposed updates to our CARB grant programs, policies and procedures manual. So we regularly update this. So we regularly update this manual to provide clarifications to our program guidelines, also to maintain consistency with CARB's program updates. So our policies and procedures manual basically sets out our local policies and procedures for implementing specific programs such as Moyer and Farmer, LEAP and CAP. Now these programs, they all have different eligible project categories. Some of those include zero emission marine, which is essentially replacing their engines in the marine vessels with cleaner diesel. And I think we're also sometimes doing zero emission engines as well. Same with ag pumps, it's just replacing electric or diesel powered agricultural pumps in the fields with electric pumps. Off-road, we're mostly doing diesel to cleaner diesel, but zero emission off-road like tractors, ag equipment are also eligible. And then again, there's other project categories. So funding agricultural replacement measures for emissions reductions, or just simply farmer for short. It's ag specific. It provides grant funds for agricultural harvesting equipment, heavy duty trucks, ag pumps again, and other, again, equipment supporting agricultural operations. CARB Moyer program also can fund agricultural equipment, but it has a broader equipment categories such as like the marine category and And then like our lawn and garden program, which I'll mention here just in a moment. This is an example of a tractor replacement project we just completed this year. On the left is the baseline equipment, the blue tractor. The top is how it was, and then the bottom two photos, it shows it post-destruction. We send all of our equipment to A&S Metals in Castroville to be destroyed and recycled. So that on the bottom left is was the tractor. And then to the right of that is the engine block. And then obviously that's the new tractor that they received. And then the grant for that, if you're curious, was a $105,000 grant to a small farm down in, there in the Greenfield Hollister area. So as I mentioned earlier, our landscape equipment exchange program is actually a chapter in Moyer, but we broke it out into a separate program. This is a new program for the district. We launched this in December of 2023. I would say it's been pretty successful so far. It's got two component programs, a residential and a commercial side, with varying incentives based on whether they're residential or commercial, and also the equipment categories you see listed there. And here's an example of a LEAP project we did. This was a commercial replacement. So they replaced 10 Ryobi leaf blowers. These were gasoline-powered leaf blowers with 10 cordless battery electric zero emission leaf blowers. And so with the program, we also allow folks to receive additional batteries and chargers so they could, you know, to improve their run times of their equipment. So we allow 4 batteries or chargers per equipment. And so they maximized their grant here and got 40 for their 10 leaf blowers. The final program I know just quickly mention is our community air protection program. This program prioritizes reducing air pollution in communities that are mostly impacted by air pollution, environmental justice communities. And so there is a CalEnviro screen, which scores and ranks different census tracts that would qualify them for identification as a disadvantaged community. This was a project that we completed with Monterey County Office of Education. This is a school bus replacement. So we replaced one of their old 1993 diesel-powered school buses with this new zero-emission battery electric school bus. So the old one's on the left, and then the side view, and then that's the engine battery area. Actually, the batteries are underneath the bus, so you can't really see them, but this is the motor. So as I mentioned, CAP is specific to priority populations. This map shows the priority populations in our area in pink. The yellow is a half mile buffer zone between the disadvantaged community in pink and low income areas that is identified in blue. So as you can see, we only have 3 DACs, and we are, although we can divert some funds to low income areas, we're just focusing on the highest priority, which is disadvantaged communities. Yes. So the lower left one near the beach, that's a marina. Basically, the top portion is like where the airfield is, you know, in Joby Aviation, and then it goes down into basically down to the coast. And then to the right of that, that's South Salinas and Spreckles area. Yeah, and then the pink area up north, that's around Watsonville. Oh yeah, you might get a closer view there. Sure. And so the presentation here again is to speak about our proposed updates to the guidelines. So across all of our programs I just mentioned, we want to implement these changes here. So we only want to receive 2 applications per potential grantee. Historically, we've allowed them to submit as many as they want, but it cuts down on our efficiency to evaluate. So we just want to streamline it a little bit and just only ask for 2 applications per applicant. Horsepower standards, especially in the ag industry, they use a variety of horsepower standards. There's power takeoff, peak horsepower, constant horsepower, et cetera. So again, we just wanted to clarify that our standard for horsepower when we're evaluating and doing calculations for emissions, we're going to use brake horsepower. And it, I mean, kind of to the point, we only want to incentivize, or we're only going to pay for California taxes and fees. That came about because we had a couple of grantees with tractor dealers. They have dealerships in Arizona where one of the, you know, these large ag operations, they might buy it down there with the intent of using it up here. So we only want to include California taxes and fees. Again, we want to impose that the final invoices and other important documents that we require for our grants come from the grantees, not the dealers. Then finally, we want to give ourselves room to reduce funding limits. So each program has funding caps and requirements based on equipment type, but we want to be able to reduce that on a case-by-case basis. Now, specifically for Moyer and Farmer, the two-for-one replacement. So we typically do one-for-one, as in one baseline for one newer, cleaner diesel tractor, for example. But in some cases, we do allow grantees to submit two old equipment to replace by one, right? So it's a two-for-one deal. In those cases where when you sum up the baseline, it's greater than 2,000 hours, rather than imposing a high usage, because again, they're giving up two for one, we didn't think it made sense. And we had some grantees having trouble trying to reach a high usage requirement. So we're just going to go with the higher of the two baselines for their replacement engine. And then also we want them to continue to use their equipment. We've noticed after applying, a lot of grantees will stop using their equipment because they're afraid of it breaking down and therefore not being eligible to proceed while we're, you know, building their contracts out. So we want to impose this minimum of 200 hours per year prior to applying. That way they continue to use their equipment, which is also a requirement in the Moyer guidelines that they do use. The equipment has to be operable. And then for our lawn and garden exchange program, just one proposed update. So for commercial applicants, we ask for their employee identification number. If they don't have that, they can submit a social security number, but in addition to the social security number, we want their state contractor's license number to just verify that they are indeed a legitimate business. And then for CAP, or community air protection, we want to set an incentive cap of $200,000 per grant or the project category max per guidelines. So depending on whether they're getting a school bus or an off-road ag or an on-road heavy-duty truck, they have different caps within the guidelines, percentage caps. And then also, we want to implement two new categories for CAP. The state actually updated and added some new categories for us. So we want to implement or include a dollar ride grant for dollar ride services. And that's basically if someone needs a ride to the hospital or an appointment or elsewhere, they can just call up this number and then someone will come shuttle them to their appointments. Then also community greening and vegetative barriers. Community greening could be something like just a park or a green space in a community somewhere, a disadvantaged community. And then vegetative barriers, you could imagine, are just useful around like farm fields. So we can fund like trees, for example, that can buffer the dust and the noise from neighborhoods and other residential areas. And with that, I invite your questions or comments.
Questions? I have one.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the CAP the old 2766? Yes. So 2766 guidelines are separate.
Right.
All right. I was confused because you changed names. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, I do have a question. How's the leaf blower program going? Great ads on KZU.
Yeah. We're getting regular applications on both the residential and commercial side, and the word is getting out there right now. We I don't know if we want to talk about the Santa Cruz, Manny, but yeah.
We do have one sort of pitfall is that a lot of communities have banned the use of some of these leaf blowers. So the question to CARB is, can we use grant monies to replace banned equipment? This is a big deal in the city of Santa Cruz as well as the county. And the county of Santa Cruz didn't really let us know that their program was predicated on using our program to replace all the equipment until the final day they brought it before their board for adoption. So I said, wait a second, we put the brakes on. We're trying to get clarification from the state on, we don't want to spend money and then be told we have to pay it back. But we do think that for commercial, it's probably okay since that's a fleet and they can use those devices elsewhere. So even if they're banned in one city, they can use them in another city or county. Residential, probably not. So right now we have a policy that says commercial, it's allowed to exchange, but not for residential at this point.
But and even with that ban, like, you know, we still allow chainsaws, trimmers, walk behind mowers, as well as stand on, sit on mowers as well. And those are also very popular. We're getting more and more applications every day.
And leaf blowers, actually, the main concern about them is noise. Noise. There is an air pollution component, but it's typically people don't like to be woken up on Saturday mornings with a leaf blower. And the electric are quieter, but they still blow dust into the air. But the user is not being exposed to, you know, two-stroke gas exhaust, so it's probably cleaner for them.
Thank you. Agenda item here is oral report.
Okay, thank you, Chair Brennan. I'll race through this and you can ask me if there's any questions at the end. So the April 17th board meeting, we basically had two, there's a bunch of other stuff that was done, but the primary objective there was that the two public hearings for our budget, and one component of that is the budget itself. The other component is the fee regulation update. So that was the first public hearing. We're required to have two under state law. So in June, the June 19th board meeting, we had our second public hearing for each of those items, and they were approved and adopted by the board. Fees for industry increased by 2.6%. Also at that board meeting, the board approved amended contract with the SEIU. Local 521, they had an opener clause in their contract for compensation, and they ended up getting a 4% increase in salary. Just on district business, I'll just mention, this is actually under engineering compliance, but we're losing one of our star engineers, Song Kim. He's going to be moving to Southern California to work for private industry and consulting firm. So that's a big loss for the district. He's been with us for 9 years, and we're going to really miss him. We also have a number of other retirements that are sort of in the works, so we'll probably let you know next time who those people are. Engineering compliance, we've launched some online tools. This is for complaints and a permit search webpage to allow the public to look at our permits in our database and get some permit information, addresses and permit type. And then as you heard Mary's presentation earlier, we've been working on the Title V emergency affirmative defense provisions for state operating permit programs. And so we've updated our Rule 218, which you saw. You see, Santa Cruz is probably one of our best customers for variances. So we're always giving them a variance. They're always doing something to work on equipment at their at the university, so they end up using backup generators and so forth, so they have to apply for a variance from permit conditions. We had a particularly sticky case where we had a gasoline station operator who refused to pay his fees for over 2 years, and we tried to shut him down. We got an abatement order from our hearings board, and we ended up having, we tried to get the DA involved and they weren't interested, which is really sad, but this case, and we're thinking this guy now has gone bankrupt, so it may be moot at this point, but we're still waiting to get some definitive information on that. But it just goes to show some districts actually will lock people's tanks so they can't receive fuel. There's a question whether that's constitutional or not. But and then one program you didn't hear about, but we still are doing our wood stove changeout program. And that continues, and we'll be have another program next year. So that's for wood changeouts as well as wood to heat pump changeouts. And then we double those incentive amounts for low-income qualified applicants. And I won't mention the lawn equipment exchange program. You can see there, this is old information, so I don't have up to date on how much we've spent, but we're going swimmingly through that program. So I think things are working well. And then you heard about the zero emission school bus program. I don't have to tell you that fire season has begun. We were tracking several fires and smoke impacts. We've got probably the largest fire in the nation in Oregon right now. And we've had several fires, one near Paradise in Butte County. That's several hundred thousand acres at the moment. And they've only got 14% containment. So that's going to be continuing. Interestingly, we have not seen a lot of impact. There's certainly enough that they could be hitting our area. AB 27, and then I just mentioned too, we stopped our Spare the Air, the alert program, which was on May 1st of every year. So we're no longer calling those until we get back into the winter time. Our grant program application is extended. And that was to April or August 1st or August 2nd. So we just give a few more months for that just to get a nice bevy of programs to choose from. And then we're also working with Morgan State University and NASA on a three-year project involving pollutant data collected from MBARD. So through our sensor network, they're going to be turning that up with satellite photos. And so NASA is looking at satellite pollution, and they're looking at PM2.5, PM10, and nitrogen oxides data. So that's really exciting, and we're really happy to be working on this cutting edge technology. And then lastly, I don't have it here, but we're working, we also got a grant through CARB, is that $2.5 million for electric whale watching vessel. So they're not, and the dad joke that I always have is they're not electric whales, but the vessel is electric powered. And so it's a catamaran. It's going to be built up in the Pacific Northwest, and they're going to power it with electric engines. And it's around 65, 70 feet long, as I recall. And it will be used to look at whales in the Monterey Bay area, which is really great. So we'll have a lot of exposure since we're going to be working with the state on getting that program implemented. So stay tuned for that in your news. We hope to make a lot of noise with that. And then lastly, as you see, there's our 50th anniversary logo. We are having a celebration, and you're all invited. And that's on Wednesday, August 21st, 3 to 5, immediately following our board presentation. I invited all the political electeds from our region, from state senators to Jimmy Panetta, and they all started turning me down, and I just thought maybe I lost some gravitas or something, but turns out that's over the convention, Democratic convention in Chicago. So we're not going to have a lot of notoriety types showing up, but we will have representatives from their offices, and they'll be presenting proclamations and resolutions and so forth. We will have food here and drinks, not alcoholic, and no bands or anything, but we hope to have a good celebration. And we're in the planning stages right now. Things are coming together. So all of you are welcome, as well as previous. If you want to invite some of our previous advisory committee members, and they're still around, then please let Siri know so we can get them on the list. But we're reaching back, and we're trying to get old board members as well. And so we hope to have a pretty good show.
Well, I'm one of those previous.
You've checked a lot of boxes.
And I also organized the 25th with Felicia Marcus. So if I think of anyone who's still around, I'll give them. Right. Okay. I do have a question about attendance. What are we going to do?
Bring this up to the board of directors. It seems to me that we still have a number of directors that have not appointed representatives to this committee. And so I got to tell you, we've been having one heck of a time, and I'll reach out to you guys. If you know a general public or health, a medical trained personnel, we need them on our advisory committee. We have not been able to, we've had to cancel some advisory committees because we don't have enough members. And we just had one of our latest members resign, so we don't have a quorum at this point. So we need a representative from the medical field as well as just the general public. And I don't know, some of you could probably qualify for that. Ultimately, engineering. So ultimately, the board will approve that. But I think the board's desperate to approve anybody at this moment. I've reached out to County Health Department. I've talked to our health officer, if he knows of anybody. There is a potential that stipends will double. So it's 200, not that most people do these things for the money, but we're hoping to be able to pay a little bit more for attendance so that people are worried about, cost of gas or electricity to get here. And that may help out. So if you know of anybody, please let me know and we'll get them nominated.
Any other business?
I had a question. There's been a couple of articles I've seen in the news recently about railroad air pollution issues, both engines that are left idling, the folks downwind complain about them. And then of course the state's talking about banning all but electric locomotives in 10 years. Do you have any involvement with the railroad folks, or are they?
Thankfully, we do not. But I am aware of other local air districts that are dealing with this, primarily engine yards where trains come in after switching, and they'll park them and keep them running overnight. And they can actually blow the National Air Quality Ambient Standards because they're so dirty. They burn bunker fuel in some of those diesel engines. So it's been problematic. We don't have any rail yards like that here where we see this type of idling, but it could happen. We do have a rail facility. And of course the state has pretty ambitious goals of trying to convert everything that is combustion related to electric by 2035. And I'm not sure the energy density issue has been overcome with locomotives. They probably have to have just one a car full of batteries to drive one of the engine. So, but there are diesel idling and quick start units that can be applied to those so they don't have to idle. These guys don't like to shut them down because they can't get them started sometimes.
Any other comments, questions? On the grant program for vegetative barriers, are you going to approach King City? They are the ones that experience the PM violations, and
yeah, we could. They've made things worse actually because of the food safety issues. They cut down all the windbreaks.
Oh, okay.
They don't like to plant anything near crops that could harbor vermin. Potential vectors of disease. So like all those, if you go Arroyo Grande, Seco, mm-hmm. cut down all these massive windbreaks. And so that accelerates the speed and kicks up even more dust. So they made it worse, but they've it's one of these trade-offs. They've protected, as you know, and have heard the E. coli outbreaks with the spinach and all that. So they've solved one problem, but created a worse problem.
See no other business or comments, so I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you. No.